Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter. On Lightmap, we explore what it takes to make video games and interactive media from creative teams all around the world. My name is Gianni. It's good to be with you for another episode. On Lightmap, it's a guide to interesting new gameplay experiences, interesting stories told through interactive media. And every episode, you get to meet new developers, artists, musicians, researchers, and more. And on this episode, we're joined by Ren Breyer, art director, designer at Witchbeam, and Tim Dawson, artist, programmer, and designer at Witchbeam. Thanks for joining us to talk about Unpacking.
Thanks for having us.
We are very excited to learn a little bit more about your game, which I think has been both critically and by players acclaimed, and we can't wait to learn more. So let's jump straight in.
If you like insightful discussions about those high-profile games that everyone's talking about, then why not check out Sifter's other podcast, Mainstream, in your podcast feed right now. We talk about those high-profile titles, those AAAs, some of those other smaller indie darlings, featuring insights from the award-winning Sifter team and other special guests. You can find Mainstream in your podcast player. That's on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or head to the Sifter website. That's sifter.com.au.
Ren and Tim, now, if people have not come across Unpacking before, what is Unpacking? How does it play?
Sure. Unpacking is a game about taking things out of boxes and finding places for them to go. It's also a game about the story of a character. You learn about her through the items that she owns, what she keeps, and what she leaves behind.
Can you tell me a little bit about the genesis of this story idea? Because I know there's a bit of a link to your own lives about how you kind of came across the idea to put this together.
Yeah, so we're both game developers, and so we talk about game design, a lot. And when I moved in to this place, and Ren was helping me unpack all my stuff, she noted that it was like, there was something game-like about the process that, you open a box and you find three or four items that you know that there's a fourth item there. There's a kind of storytelling already, that you finish a box and you unlock the box beneath it. And there was all these
You complete sets and create order out of chaos, which really is what a lot of games are about.
And it was something that we were talking about, like, to kind of fill the time and think about it, but we kind of kept coming back to it. And out of that, like, Ren suggested a story, and that's kind of where the whole thing unfolded from.
Yeah, and Tim helped me figure out an ending for it.
What did it take to take it from an idea that you were talking about, sort of discussing, and then make it into a game? What were the first steps for you?
So what it took was a kick in the butt in the form of a deadline. So we decided to submit Unpacking to Stugan, the Games Accelerator program in Sweden, which we had heard of and like had wanted to submit to in years, but just like either didn't have an idea or it was not the right time, like we were busy with other things. And this time the timing worked well and we had this idea and we were like, all right, let's make a prototype for Stugan, submit it. And if it goes well, we go to Sweden for 2 months to work on this game. And if they don't accept it, which was, what we expected, we will have started on this project and we can make it in Brisbane, kind of in our free time. And to my surprise, they did accept us. So we went to Sweden and worked on it there. And then came back, and through a series of interesting circumstances, decided that this should be Witchbeam's next project, and started work on it full time in the beginning of 2019.
Can you tell me a bit more about those interesting circumstances?
Yeah, so we'd worked on it for we'd gone out to Sweden, worked on it for 7 weeks, and got this playable prototype. We got back to Australia, we posted a GIF on Twitter to be like, hello, here's this game that we're making. It's a sped up video of the kitchen being unpacked. And then it just kind of went berserk. We got huge numbers of people liking and sharing the tweet. Someone posted it on Reddit and it got a million something. So
I forget how many, but not it got I don't think it was
100,000.
I think it was 100,000, but it was more than we ever expected.
It blew up. We suddenly had all these Twitter followers on the account that were overtaking the previous game I'd made. It's like, okay.
Yeah, and
this is getting traction.
And we had publishers sliding into our DMs being like, hey, what's this you're making here?
Tell us about your game.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the day after, I think it was the day after we got back.
It was from Australia, 2 days after we got to Australia, still extremely jet lagged.
We agreed to show the game at a local Brisbane event, and we had Screen Queensland ask us to pitch funding, which was closing in 10 days, which we then got. So suddenly, these series of events all happened together, where we came back and suddenly everyone was into the game. Publishers were talking to us. Screen Queensland were literally going to give us some money, and it was like, okay, we have this is serious. This went from our fun little project to we should do this properly. And it made sense to me to bring it into Witchbeam, which is a studio that I started, and Jeff's part of as well, because Jeff did the audio. So
At this point, there was no audio. Jeff was going to do the audio.
That's what I mean. But Jeff was on board to do the audio, and so it kind of made sense to do this as a Witchbeam project.
Hmm.
To me, I liked the idea. We had people say why not just kind of spin up another company or some kind of thing. But to me, I kind of like the idea of I like Witchbeam being this kind of entity that can make what it wants. It's exciting.
Yeah, and for me, I wasn't part of Witchbeam, but Witchbeam has been super helpful in making this project, and Witchbeam ended up funding the project because we were when we were shopping for publishers and stuff, we were thinking initially, yeah, we want funding, but eventually we thought about what we actually wanted from a publisher, and we were actually, we are better off funding this ourselves, and that way we have more leverage and have to give lower percentages and all this stuff. There's a lot of advantages.
Yeah, marketing support and
bring it to market.
How did you, take feedback on board from people you did show it off to? Was it mostly just people within the industry, or did you have sort of play events where people could actually have a chance to put hands on it? Because I know for a lot of studios, that experience of getting people to play it, you sort of find those points where there's sticking points or where people are really finding a bit of joy.
Yeah, so we had so many players play it of all kinds. So all the way from Stugan. So at Stugan, we had other devs play it, when we did playtesting nights, but also we had just random guests. Often they'd be industry people, but they'd bring their families. We had little kids play it. We had older people, people's parents. And it just, we got a really wide variety of feedback from industry and non-industry folks alike during Stugan. And then when we came back here, we showed the game at a lot of events. First, we showed our initial prototype, which was just the kitchen level, which now is the kitchen and the final level of the game. Then we showed our two-level demo, which is still our demo to this day, which we kept updating based on feedback and improvements to the game. But I would say tens of thousands of people have played our demo, so we got a lot of feedback.
Yeah, we while in Sweden, we actually showed the game. There was a public event at
Falun, in Stockholm. Falun first, yeah.
Yeah, we did it was show like out in kind of out of the city in Sweden.
Yeah.
And then I was in Stockholm. Then we got back and showed at a Brisbane event. We did we were invited to Day of the Devs.
Yeah.
And
we did the Parallels talk.
I was going to say the GDC.
GDC Mild Rumpus.
And this is all, and then we got into
Bit Summit.
Yeah, Bit Summit in Kyoto, and PAX Australia
Yeah, AFCON first.
We did AFCON as well, Adelaide. So we ended up actually doing a lot of public showings before that thing happened. That stopped that, and then even after that
thing in the before times,
and then even after that, we got into the PAX Online showcase. We were part of that, which was tied to a Steam demo. So we kind of basically moved to Steam demos, which honestly is a lot harder to like peek over someone's shoulder, but you do get to see a lot of people.
You get
streaming.
To watch people stream, and you actually get a lot out of that too. I've had a lot of like useful revelations from watching people stream, from like noticing bugs to noticing like how people play the game, or that they want to put something somewhere that we don't allow. And even like to this day, whenever I watch a stream, I might sometimes notice like, oh, this item's not allowed here and I think it should be. And I'm like, Jim, for our next patch, let's do this.
Tell me a little bit about the design of the puzzles in this game, because it is, I guess I would describe it as sort of a light puzzle game, but there is the primary mode that you play it. There are specific places that things have to be placed. Can you tell me about some of the considerations you had when you were designing this so that people could, I guess, draw on their own knowledge of the world, but also make it so that you could direct them in a way that tells a story?
Yeah, I think a large part of the design was trying to keep things varied. So we have some items that are very easy to place and they're just very like, where do you think this should go? And other ones where it gets a little bit tricky, like you might be trying to arrange all of the clothes in a drawer or get all the books on a shelf. And maybe there's too many books to fit on one shelf. So now you have to decide where you're going to split them, which category of book is going to go on one shelf versus another. And then other items have more specific places to go where you either have to know what the item is or the item has some sort of importance to the character. And so by having these varying levels, it's really important to, you're not always solving the same kind of thing, even in a light puzzle context.
Hmm. And then we add like complexity in levels as they come. So like the very first level, you start in just the kids' room and it's just one room and things are pretty simple, but then you move into an apartment with three rooms, and then you have to take items from one room to another sometimes. And then you move into an apartment where you're not allowed to move other people's stuff. You're living with housemates and you can't move their stuff, only yours. And you fit yourself around them. And then you're in an apartment where you can move stuff, but you know, you're living with another person. You have to make room for yourself. So there's just like new little challenges that we add with every level. Like we try to make every level have a good reason to be there. Not just story-wise, but also gameplay-wise. Like each one brings something new to the table in some way.
Have you had any challenges with people not quite understanding what you've designed because they just don't have that familiarity with the item?
Yeah, sometimes people struggle a little bit with items that are not familiar to them. Even like the markers, some people are like, what's that? I don't know what that is. But usually when I see like a stream, someone in the chat will be like, they're markers. And it doesn't matter that they don't know that they're Copic markers and that they are like, well, I guess off-brand Copic markers, no trademark things. They don't know that they're these specific artist markers, and they don't know that you get them like one by one or in small packs and you kind of amass a collection. But they go like, oh, okay, I guess I have more markers now. And they still kind of get the gist of it, even though they're not like, wow, this is like real life.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the design as well was embracing the idea that some details would go over people's heads, like and that was okay, because if something lands for you and makes a connection, it's worth more because you knew that you didn't have to make that connection, that some things will resonate and other things will just be like, oh, okay, I guess that's a sports equipment, I guess, versus someone else going like, oh, it's a frisbee, maybe she plays ultimate frisbee, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think something interesting was that when we were developing this game, we were thinking some people will be playing this game solely for decorating a room, and that's okay. Like, if they don't notice a single story element, that's still fine. We want them to also still enjoy the game. And so the entire story, in a way, is optional. The only places where people who play like that run into problems is with the really with the picture of the couple in a particular level, where that level relies on them having paid some attention to the story. So interestingly, we do actually get some people going like, sending us emails and being like, help, I've run into a bug. This picture can't go on the wall. I've tried restarting the game and it didn't help. And I'm just like, oh my God. So maybe that's a little bit on us, that we were like, yeah, you can play this game without needing to care about the story at all. And then we made this one choice where you absolutely had to care about the story at least a little to be able to figure it out. But it is heartening to know that, you know, this many people have played the game and run into that situation and eventually figured it out and went, oh, and not like, you know, the handful of people who send us bug reports that the picture can't go on the wall are in a tiny, tiny minority.
I found this particularly interesting in sort of the streams and some of the reviews that I've seen that people have put together. A whole bunch of male players not knowing what to do with pads and tampons, just having no idea what this item was, couldn't tell you.
That is so funny. Yeah. Generally, I think like dudes know, but maybe younger dudes. I've also seen kids be like, what's this?
Yeah, but it's a great teaching moment. And I think this is something else we didn't appreciate at first that we realized during development, was that the game works surprisingly well in a group situation. If you can play it in front of people and people can be calling out things or judging you because you put something somewhere where they find it really objectionable. And that translates surprisingly well to streaming. Like Ren mentioned before that sometimes people will be like, what is this? But someone in their chat will tell them. Mm. And I like that because it's kind of like a community, like everyone comes together to do the puzzle kind of thing. And the puzzles are low stakes.
What are some of the items that you've kind of been surprised about the reactions that people have had?
I mean, the GameCube is the one that...
Oh, yeah, that's the funniest.
Blew our minds. We were worried, like... make sure we don't make it look too much like a GameCube so Nintendo won't get angry. And then we're like, maybe we should have made it look a bit more like...
Yeah, but even then, it's like, I think generally the reaction is from people who just don't know the console because they're young.
And they're trying to put it in the kitchen.
Yeah, they go, is this like an air fryer? Like, oh my God, it makes me feel so old and it's extremely funny. So I'm happy with it.
The game has picked up an Australian Game Developer Award. You were the Game of the Year. Fans around the world seem to have really loved it. Can you tell me a little bit about the reaction and this, how the game has performed for you?
Yeah, I think it's gone really well. We're really happy. Like, we've had some really nice reviews. Like, just us, you know, if you look around the kind of scores we're getting, they're kind of universally pretty high, which is really kind of validating and nice. But I think the standout thing for me is the way people have been writing about the game has been beyond my expectation and experience with that. Like, people are writing about the personal connections that it's making with them, or that they're calling out and saying, I've never experienced something like this in a video game. And that's like big words. You don't bust that out lightly.
I think the thing I love the most about reviews of Unpacking is that so often, unlike a lot of reviews, like, these start with a personal story from the person writing it about their own life and how the game kind of fits into it, how it made them feel things about their own life. That really makes me happy that people are having it like resonate like that. Recently, I watched someone's stream VOD. They mentioned they cried in the credits, and I kind of like seeing people cry in the credits. I'm not gonna lie. I hope that doesn't make me sound psycho. Tim's like disgusted with me. It's really crazy to me that like this game that's like this really personal thing that I made like has touched people like this. And the credit sequence, we worked really hard on that. We almost kind of think of it as a cutscene, and like it's got a song in it, and I sing the song, so it's like it's a really personal sequence for me. And so whenever someone's like, I cried in the credits, and they tell me there's a stream, I'm like, maybe I should go see that. And I really hope that doesn't make me sound psycho. I'm sorry. But yeah.
I think 100%. Every artist who wants to make something wants to connect with people, and it's connecting with people. So I think you should be really proud of that.
Cool. Yeah. So I went and watched that stream, and it's like, I could not believe how, like, this girl, I think she was like a teenager, and she was playing, I was watching her play the final level, and she was saying, this game makes me feel like the future will be okay. Like, I know it's weird, it's just a game, but it's making me feel like things will be okay. And that's like something that we really need right now. Like, I don't know if I feel that the future will be okay. And if I could give that feeling to someone out there, that means a lot. And it was so funny and sweet, like, watching her go through the credits, because first she starts with, no, I don't want the game to be over. I'm so sad. And, like, the credits are going and the song's going, and she's like, this is so sad. This is so sad. And about halfway through, she starts going, I'm crying because I'm happy. And I was just like, wow, she just, like, flipped. And yeah, just like her reaction to the whole ending, she was like, the final scene, I don't want to spoil it, but she like got to it and she like gasped out loud and then took a screenshot so fast she accidentally took two. It was just like very sweet and very touching. She finished and she's like, are you flipping kidding me? Why did I just cry about a game about boxes? Why did I just cry in a puzzle game?
It's a really amazing experience, and I think as it's been recognized by lots of people, it's one we really don't see a lot of told, really, in a way. You know, there are lots of different types of games, but Unpacking is one that's really, really interesting. And I think for me, the way that the layers of storytelling and that context really builds up for people, and it's like you get an insight into little pieces of knowledge that you might have and you bring to your life. It's been really popular. It's been pretty exciting to see that everyone's been sharing it and doing those GIF mode where people have been, you know, making little animations and stories out of it and retelling that there. Can you tell me a little bit about the implementation of that? Because that seems like a really clever idea for people to be able to share the story of what they've done. And I'm always curious to see, like, some of the way that people put their rooms together. I don't know. Not for me.
So it's funny because, you know, the first GIF that blew up and got a lot of attention was I recorded me unpacking the kitchen and then just really sped it up because, you know, you're trying to make something that's time efficient for Twitter. And my business partner actually suggested when he was playing an early build of the game was going like, you should make a mode where you can spit out a GIF so that people can have that like of
and can post it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, good for posting on social media. And it's an interesting technical problem because it's like, how do you record a replay of like unpacking a room? So I kind of had to come up with a system to, as you're unpacking the room, it's recording instructions that relate to each action you can kind of take.
Because then, recording the actual footage would be like really kind of resource intensive.
Yeah, there's a bunch of reasons why you can kind of wouldn't want to capture it right at the time, but and so instead it's like capturing these instructions and then trying to play them back is surprisingly complicated. It's like it's a replay system. In theory, because the game's deterministic and like turn-based effectively, like one action can happen at a time, it's fairly simple, but in practice there's like a million things that can go wrong. And like early in development of that feature, like you'd end up with items would get placed in walls and things would get placed in other, you know, hung on railings when they're not supposed to be hung on railings because something would get off by one and then the rest of the replay would just be, you know, forget about it kind of thing. It was a really complicated feature to get working, but in the end I was very happy. Like we knew we wanted it basically. And the two ways we could approach it was to kind of cheat it and just have everything fly into their final position from the save file, or do this kind of replay And I'm really glad we did the replay version because you get to see all the decisions and changes.
And people are using it to make adorable little animations.
Yeah.
Like, we did not expect that. I expected people to do creative things with, like, our photo mode and you know, in their organizing. But I did not expect people to be making essentially little stop motion videos with our replay feature of, like, the chicks following the chicken around or, like, the pig and the cat doing, like, a knife fight.
You've reached a bit where, unfortunately, now you're starting to see a bunch of people try to clone your game or at least, you know, rip it off. This week, I noticed that you put something out to say that there were a number of unpacking clones that weren't really anything to do with that that are appearing on Google Play in particular. Can you tell me about the impact that is? Because you're only a very small team having to deal with impacts like that.
Yeah. So funnily enough, this is not even the first time. Like, this started while we were still in development, and that was one of our fears with doing this kind of open development, where people know about our game like 3 years before we release it. What if someone tries to clone it? But the thing is, our game is so detailed and has like so much to it that good luck, you know, trying to make something like it. You can make a game that attempts to do the same things, but it's not going to have like this level of heart, this level of detail.
I'd say, and like the Google Play stuff is actually like, we're less worried about people trying to copy the game, because honestly, like, you know, if you see something you like with that, like, extend, go beyond kind of thing, it's people trying to cash in on the unpacking specifically. Like, these apps are not clones. They're like
they just all they do is they say that they're unpacking something guide, but the word guide in the store goes like off the screen, like it's a little too long. So you see unpacking game, and players go, oh, I want this. And in the description somewhere after all the details about the game, it says, this is a guide. This is not a game. And then, like, it just, in the best case, it just has, like, some info about the game, and it sends them to our website. And after you click a button or something, it basically tells you to rate it, and then you can go into the game, and they rate it, so the app goes higher on the store, and then they take you to just a series of ads.
Yeah.
So what happens is these people go are like, I can't enter the game, and they go on our website and send us tons and tons of emails or sign up to our mailing list thinking that will let them play the game. Which both means that they are not people who actually wanted to sign up to our mailing list, so they're not like quality subscribers. But they bump up our subscriber count, which means we pay more for our mailing list service now because of these apps.
Yeah, it's really, and so basically they're kind of parasitic in the sense that they're just writing the name and trying to show people ads or bump up their rating and, you know, play the Google Store. There's all this whole ecosystem of like, and you can see it, they do it with other games as well. And then the end result for us is that we end up doing support emails with people being like, how to play the game, and they show up in their Discord channel and say like, hey, I'm trying to make the game run, and we're like, oh, you have to buy it on Steam, and they're
like, what? It's not free? Bye.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a pain. It's both you look at Google and you go like, this is not right, and also they're wasting our time. Like,
yeah. Directly. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, I feel like Google has to just constantly field these DMCA requests. And I'm just like, couldn't you just make sure these don't get on the store in the first place? I feel like this would actually be less work. Just my opinion.
It's a really interesting and amazing experience, unlike anything else I've played this year. Ren and Tim, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Lightmap.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're interested in the game, I recommend you go directly to unpackinggame.com, or you can follow Unpacking A Life on Twitter or Witchbeam Games on Twitter as well if you're interested in playing. It's available on the Xbox Game Pass, but also on the storefronts as well. My name is Gianni. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Lightmap. Lightmap is produced by Fiona Bartholomaeus, Nicholas Kennedy, Daniel Ang, Sarah Ireland, Adam Christou. Mitchell Lowe is our senior producer, and my name is Gianni Giovanni. I'm the executive producer. You can find links to everything we talked about on our website, which is sifter.com.au. While you're online, why not join the Sifter community where you can share your creativity? If you're working on a project, maybe you're putting together a prototype game and you want a little bit of feedback of what it's like, you can share that in our Discord, sifter.com.au/Discord. And while you're there, tell people that they might enjoy the conversations on this episode. One of the best free things you can do to support the show is to tell them about it. Tell them that we speak to different developers all around. If they're going to enjoy it, that's a really great thing you can do. That's all for now. Thank you, Ren. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
And until next time, have fun. Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today at sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.